Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Missouri legislators are rolling up their sleeves to begin a brand new legislative session this week. The agenda appears full with issues that have been debated before and some that have been influenced by recent events, most notably the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting. It's prompting a flurry of proposals, including arming teachers. Medicaid and national health care issues will get a workout, and right-to-work taxes and tax credits will have a prominent place in the legislative hopper. We're previewing the session on today's program. With me in studio, Joe Manis, political reporter for the St. Louis Beacon. Terry Jones, he chairs the Department of Political Science at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. And from Jefferson City, St. Louis Public Radio's Capitol correspondent, Marshall Griffin. Thank you all so much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Good to be back.
Marshall, I know they're getting ready for events next week, but we have to take a look at what's going to be happening starting on Wednesday. I'll begin with you. New leadership in both the House and the Senate. What is the impact likely to be, do you think, on the session with the new men at the helm?
Well, in some people's opinions, we can go nowhere but up as far as the rocky relationship between the House and the Senate over the past couple of years. Of course, Stephen Tilley left before his term of office ended, and Rob Mayer, still officially President Pro Tem. If you go to the Senate's website, you'll see that everyone who was a senator last year is still listed there, whereas on the House's website, if your term is up, you're already gone. The House website is already in place, as it will be this year. But as far as the relations, it could be a little bit better. Tim Jones probably has more of a reputation of a firebrand than Stephen Tilley does.
That's House Speaker Tim Jones, by the way, just so everyone knows.
Right, House Speaker Tim Jones. But apparently he looks to have a better relationship with the incoming President Pro Tem, Tom Dempsey. So I would think that they would have a better working relationship. One, I guess we all hope that they have a better working relationship. Or maybe not. You know, we're just here to observe and not to pull from one side or the other. But other than that, I think we could see maybe hopefully a little bit more cooperation between the House and Senate in recent years, at least on some issues.
Terry Jones, both of these gentlemen are from our area here in St. Louis. Does that give this area any disproportionate clout, do you think, in the session?
It's certainly hoping it will. And both come from similar parts of the area. Speaker Jones is from West St. Louis County, the Eureka area, and President Pro Tem Dempsey is from St. Charles County.
Yeah. Joe, your take on the new leadership?
Well, I think that Speaker Jones, for example, I think he is a very strong conservative, has very strong views. I'm not sure if he's as pragmatic as Steve Tilley was. But Jones also, though, what he believes in, he will push. So he has made very clear already, he's been very upfront about what issues he wants to push during this coming session. And I think most people take him at his word. I mean, if Jones wants to push something, it will be pushed. And that's various economic issues, but also he wants to go after union rights, and he has already made that clear. And he wants to try quickly to change the law so that statewide elections would have to be held for statewide vacancies. Let's say if the lieutenant governor, for example, would end up being picked as the Republican nominee for Congress in Southeast Missouri, and they want to stem that right off, and they're hoping to use the Republicans are hoping to use their veto-proof majority to get that through because they assume the governor would veto it right away. But it's that kind of thing where that bill may come up early if it looks like Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder has a shot. Jones is good at trying to preempt things.
Let's talk for a moment about that quote, and I'm putting it in quotes, the veto-proof majority, because it is, but it isn't, or it certainly could, certainly maybe won't be. Is that correct? Explain that.
Correct. Well, technically, the Republicans right now have 109 of the House, 163 House seats. However, there's one vacancy already. They did have 110. But the governor shrewdly appointed one of the Republicans to a board, and Governor Nixon, who's a Democrat, has yet to say when there might be an election to fill that seat. And there's some predictions that may take a few months. So there might be another appointee or two. So they need every vote. And Tilly generally could get it on a couple issues, but there's some stuff where suburban Republicans won't necessarily agree. And so there might potentially might be a Republican split on a few things, and but those few things could be important. And I think it will be more difficult this time to get any Democrats to peel off, whereas Tilly needed three or four and was able to do that. Now, in the Senate actually, the Republican majority is actually down a bit, just a couple seats. They still have – they have 24 seats. They need 23. But again, you've got some suburban Republicans that, depending on the issue, might peel off. So, in fact, there's general consensus that they probably don't have the votes to override a gubernatorial veto of right to work. That's the consensus.
Right. Terry Jones, Scott Sifton, who is a newcomer to the Senate, has said that the role of the Democrats this time could be that of kingmakers. Do you see it that way?
Well, they certainly hope so. Yes, it's veto-proof, but both the Senate and the House, as Joe has already indicated, are just one or two votes above that. And the larger your majority, the more difficult it is to keep that majority together. And it's interesting that both President Pro Tem Dempsey and Speaker Jones have effectively conceded that right to work won't happen because they know that there are a few members of each of their respective delegations that won't go along with it.
And Marshall, how do you see all this playing out?
I think that there's going to be a good bit of floor time devoted to speeches about the needs for right to work. But otherwise, I don't think there will be a serious push because I think they know that they don't have the votes. It's going to be very tough to get the votes to actually try to push something through and get it overridden if need be.
But I think, though, Jones has told me and others that he does intend to push some of the provisions that he thinks might be able to get certain provisions of it. I mean, for your listeners, right to work would basically bar agreements between employers and unions that everyone in a particular company or a workplace be a member of that union if a majority have voted for it. This would require that even if unions win a majority, they would still have to go to each person to get union dues paid. They would people could still not be in the union, whereas now in Missouri, they have to pay the dues. They can require that the part be peeled off that might be used for political purposes, but even if you don't want to be a member of the union, you still have to pay the dues. Now, this would change that, and in fact, Jones is talking about pushing what the Republicans call the Paycheck Protection Act, which is basically the dues part, and they think they might have the votes for that. So in effect, they could get through probably the most volatile part of the right to work without technically passing right to work.
Terry Jones, with regard to Governor Nixon, is he walking a very fine line this time, or does he have a little more wiggle room because this is not an election year for him? In fact, he can't run again.
Well, he can run for something else, so we need to keep that in mind. He's been walking a fine line for his first 4 years, and he'll continue to have to do so for his second term. Obviously, he did not like the notion of having a veto-proof House or Senate, even though you're right, there should be quotations around that. On the other hand, he is a veteran. We have to remember that he's been there in one way or another since 1986. He knows how the game is played, and he plays it very well.
Yeah, Marshall, we've had I don't want to digress too much at this particular point. We've had many discussions here on this program about the political future of Jay Nixon. what do you hear down there? I mean, do we hear maybe he's going to run for the Senate? He might be a viable vice presidential selection. He might even run for president. What do you hear in the Capitol itself?
Well, at this point, not a whole lot. But just from what I can tell you is that it would seem like he might have a better shot at either mounting a U.S. Senate race against Roy Blunt, or maybe just, you know, dropping his name as hints in the hopper. A lot of this, I think, as far as a presidential or vice presidential run, I think whether or not there's something viable to that, we'll have to wait and see over the next year or two whether Governor Nixon continues to put forth the independent conservative voice for Missourians, or whether he starts to sound and look more like a traditional Democrat.
Or a sensible centrist.
Yes.
I think he might try to be a bit more gutsy the second term. I mean, governors, the governors who've had second terms often have been. Sometimes it's been a boost to them. Sometimes it's not been. But I think that just from what he's done just since the election, coming out strongly in favor of the Medicaid expansion, which he had not done in this previous year, although he had campaigned on just the general idea of restoring the Medicaid cuts back in 2008, after a few where he was blocked by the General Assembly, he sort of backed off. Now he's embracing it. Now he's been, you know, traveling with members of the Hospital Association in various parts of the state. And he already has come out against this proposal about arming teachers. So there's a few things where he's come out early, and I think that's in line with the fact that he won't be running again for governor. And I think whatever he runs for, he needs to show that he is a Democrat. I mean, he can still be a centrist, but I think you might see him be a bit more vocal this time. Now, whether or not it has any better results, I don't know.
And he's traditionally been a Democrat on labor union issues, on choice issues.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, he has been.
And he will probably need to rebuild some of the relationships with other Democrats in Missouri as well. He has not been very helpful at times in years past with primary elections and things of that nature. He may need to be more of a supporter of other Democrats seeking office. That might help as well.
But he's always been a loner. I mean, J.A. Nixon, that's been actually one of his virtues to some. But, yeah, he's always been somewhat of a loner.
Marshall, pre-filings, what has caught your attention in terms of what's been pre-filed?
Well, obviously, if the armed teachers bill, which has gotten lots of attention. On the other side of the issue, Stacey Newman, a St. Louis County Democrat, has filed legislation that would require closing the so-called gun show loophole in Missouri and require background checks for anyone that would buy any type of firearm at a gun show in Missouri. Of course, with the veto-proof majority in the House and the Senate, that bill probably will maybe get a little bit of attention as far as speeches on floors, or maybe the chance of trying to add that to it as an amendment. But there's no real chance of that passing, I don't think, unless she gets some help from maybe a renegade Republican or two to get it heard in committee, maybe. But that's one of the things. And of course, if you remember back to December 1st or November 30th, one that sounded very interesting at the time, and that was Jeff Rorta's pre-filed bill that would make it illegal for big chain department stores to open on Thanksgiving Day. That would be kind of interesting to see if that actually has any legs to it.
Well, of course, when that was pre-filed, it was right after Thanksgiving Day.
Pre-file it.
We've got to take a break. We'll do that now. Continue with our preview of the Missouri legislative session. The legislature convenes on Wednesday. And with me in studio, Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon, Terry Jones, political scientist from the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and joining us by phone from Jefferson City is Marshall Griffin, St. Louis Public Radio's Jefferson City correspondent. Back in just a moment. Hey, we'll take your calls, too. What issues do you think should get legislative priority this time around? 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL On Air, and you can reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our discussion, or preview, I should say, of the Missouri legislature, which convenes on Wednesday. With me in studio, Terry Jones and Joe Manis, and joining us from Jefferson City is Marshall Griffin. Let's take the Medicaid story once again, Joe. You were saying some interesting things before we went on the air. This is something that everyone has been pointing at as being the big issue of this session. Is it going to be?
Well, okay, I could be totally wrong. I'm just a reporter. But I really think that based on what Speaker Jones has said and Dempsey and others, I will be surprised if it's even brought up or if it's brought up much. In other words, unless the Missouri Hospital Association or other major players in the industry who have been pushing for the expansion, I don't think the leaders in the General Assembly will bring it up. I think regardless of everybody talking about it and writing about it, philosophically, Jones in particular and Dempsey and others are totally opposed to the idea of the Medicaid expansion. Forgetting the money issue, whether or not the federal government which says they'll pay all the extra costs for 3 years, and then the state's costs would be phased in, so no more than 10%. A, they don't believe the federal government's going to have the money to follow through with that. B, even if it did, that's not, I mean, this is, they don't care from the standpoint, this is a philosophical issue with them. They strongly believe, many conservatives believe that the government should not be in the healthcare business or should be very limited in the healthcare business, and they do not want to see this expansion. And whatever other people say are the advantages or disadvantages, they don't want it, don't believe in it, and they won't push it. So unless there's some impetus from the hospital association or others that persuade them to change their mind on that, I frankly think that everybody else is going to be talking about it, but it's not going to be talked about in the General Assembly that much.
Marshall, do you buy that? You've got the boots on the ground right there in Jefferson City. Do you agree with Joe?
I do. I think the lawmakers who will be talking about it will be the Democrats, who will be, you know, saying, we need this. Why aren't we going after this? This will help us. I think it will. I think it will be overlooked. I think it will. It'll be not talked about very much, and it will definitely not be pursued. The interesting thing to me will be, what will Governor Nixon do after May 17th or 18th, whenever the session ends, when Medicaid expansion does not happen, because it will not happen under the current leadership. Tom Dempsey, actually, in an interview I did with him about a week ago, brought up the idea of, why don't we let every state come up with its own health care plan? You know, let all the states do it instead of this overarching federal umbrella. But, you know, that might sound good, but it's not realistically going to happen, at least not for the next 4 years, not unless there's unless a change in party at the White House in 4 years from now, and even then, maybe not.
Terry Jones, it has to be difficult to turn your back on all those federal dollars that are out there.
What's interesting is the Republicans, having lost the health care policy battle at the national level, are continuing to fight it in states, and Missouri is clearly one of those. This will not necessarily be the most controversial issue in terms of amount of attention on the legislative floor, but it is the most consequential in terms of impact on Missourians. I think this is going to lead up to the major election issue in 2014 in state representative and state senate races. If Missouri does not sign on, if two or three or four or more rural hospitals who no longer get the support for uncompensated care, not to mention urban hospitals, go under in the rural areas and start to put added pressure on the health care system, will ideology triumph pragmatism, and how long will that happen?
Well, we have a call from Carl in St. Louis I'd like to take now, because he wants to address the Medicaid issue. So let's bring in Carl. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking. Yes, I have been diagnosed as legally blind. Lost my job, obviously, and no driving, of course. I'm currently on Social Security disability and receiving Medicaid. I was eligible for cash assistance for the blind, but was turned down last Friday. No reason was given. And my Medicaid spend-down limit was zero. Think of that as a deductible of some sort. It went up to $1,100 a month. No reason either was given for that. And when I hear that Medicaid is to be reformed or expanded, boy, I have to shiver. Any thoughts on that? Do you think they will be addressing this in the next session?
Other health care issues will get caught up as part of the overall Medicaid expansion debate, and they will be bit players in that debate.
Okay. All right.
Carl's in a tough spot, given his circumstance, isn't he?
Yes, I think, you know, there was an effort the last couple sessions, there's been efforts, some fairly close, who were trying to eliminate Missouri's longstanding aid program for people who were blind. The governor managed to fight that off. But as I said before, I will be surprised if there is any sort of General Assembly action to expand Medicaid. And I think that as Professor Jones said, I personally think that the only way that there will be action will be if some of these hospitals close. I think until you have actual closures, I don't see the General Assembly doing much. I mean, the members of the Hospital Association, some of them had been outspoken against the initial wave of Medicaid cuts back in 2005. Those happened. There was an effort in 2006 and then again this last November to increase Missouri's tobacco tax. And while officially there was other things it's supposed to be used for, the behind-the-scenes thought, particularly in 2006, was that the money would in effect help put some of these people back on the rolls. It failed both times. Now, partly because some could say because the proponents didn't really lay out the case of what they were going to do. But the bottom line is, unless the Missouri Hospital Association and its allies can show that they have more political muscle than they have shown in the past, and I'm not being judgmental, I'm just being stating the facts here, I don't see the General Assembly responding.
Another key element here is the business community, particularly the Chamber, Missouri Chamber of Commerce, and the civic groups in Kansas City and St. Louis, how much they are going to push for Medicaid expansion and how within Republican circles and how much they can threaten to dry up some of the funding for campaigns in 2014.
And what's interesting is that the Missouri Chamber put out their list of priorities last week for the session, and while they have come out against, I mean, in favor of the expansion to some degree, that the Medicaid wasn't on that list, and that was like a 3 or 4 page list. The Medicaid expansion wasn't on it.
That's a pretty big tip, isn't it? Tip off, isn't it?
Yes.
Marshall, what about the health exchanges? Is that any legs to that in this session?
No. And you think there would be with the extended deadlines that maybe there could be a few Republicans that might say, you know what, this is still going to get pushed on us. We should at least, you know, have control of our own health care exchange and not let Washington control it for us, but it's still, I don't see any progress on Republicans changing their mind on exchanges. I think Missouri's exchange will wind up being one that's run from Washington.
And I'm repeating myself to some extent. I think this is working out to be the issue in 2014, both in the General Assembly and then working its way into the major difference between Democrats and Republicans in the state elections in November 2014.
But I think I disagree slightly. I think only if there's a number of other states that do it and there appears to be a help in other states, let's put it this way, if that the other states that embrace either the extra Medicaid money or write up their own exchange proposals, I think if it starts looking good of what those other states are doing, then I think it might be an issue in 2014. I think if it's still unclear, I think it might be 2016 before you really start seeing a fight over it. And, of course, then it becomes whipped up into linked to the presidential contest.
And, of course, 2014 is the year in which the ACA is basically going to be fully implemented, as I understand it.
Except in Missouri.
and some other states.
Which will be the campaign rhetoric.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because where it's been implemented to this point, to those provisions that have been implemented, it proved very popular. So once people get a dose of how it works, it seems that they like it. But there's still much to be implemented.
Yeah, because the stuff about the expansion of Medicaid, that has yet to go kick into gear. That'll be another year.
Yeah. Marshall, a couple of things that we've been hearing about, talk about restructuring the tax code and also restructuring the criminal code. How do these look to you in terms of attention?
I think these will probably get more. They'll certainly get more attention than Medicaid expansion will. When it comes to tax code in particular, there's a one bill that once again would include a cigarette tax hike increase, but its sponsor, Senator Lamping from St. Louis County, says it's only part of an overall omnibus bill, and he's open to other suggestions. But he says that that Missouri's tax structure needs to be redone. I don't think we'll see internet sales tax as any part of that, nor a cigarette tax hike.
Joe?
Yes, yeah. I think it's true. Although there have been some rumblings on the internet tax front because, frankly, there's a lot of businesses, small businesses, and others in the state who feel like they are being hurt by the fact that Missouri doesn't really enforce tax on internet sales. If you've got people who are buying, let's say, books on Amazon and they can get away with it and without paying tax, and then the local bookstore, you know, is at a disadvantage. If there's an organized effort, I think there might at least be some floor talk about it.
The notion as raised by Rex Sinkfield about replacing the state income tax with a state sales tax, is that under discussion, Marshall?
It will be. It's been discussed a lot in years past. And whether or not it makes any real progress this year, I think will remain to be seen. But I do think the strategy has been to bring it up every year, talk about it every year, get more people used to the idea, and eventually maybe it's something that can be pushed and actually passed and adopted. I don't see it happening this year, but I do think that maybe it makes some progress as far as actually, say, getting perfected on the House floor or something along those lines.
Terry?
Eliminating the income tax, which is also spurred by Kansas doing much in that direction, is really linked to the internet sales tax, because Missouri would have to rely more on sales tax if it lowered or eliminated its income tax. And the sales tax is decreasing in terms of the overall amount to be taxed, largely, although not completely, because of internet commerce.
I wouldn't ask our journalist colleagues here to comment on that, but I will ask you as the public policy guy, is this a good idea or a bad idea, do you think?
It's a bad idea. In terms of if you value equity in the tax system, first of all, and if you value diversity of sources in the tax system so that you're not reliant on just one source to collect your taxes.
Joe?
Yeah, well, I think, though, regardless of that argument, the legislature will be pushing, the Republicans will be pushing, trying to eliminate or phase out the income tax for businesses. I'd written a story at stlbeacon.org right after the election where Dempsey and others were saying that they were going to be pushing this. The idea would be that it would be phased out over 5 years. But see, that's like $450-460 million a year out of the state's budget. So you would almost need some sort of counter to that. The governor hasn't said anything publicly, but now his budget director told me last week for the record that that was sort of a risky move. I figured the fact that the budget director was even saying that meant that it had been an okay sort of from the administration, that they are going to try to discourage some of that talk unless there is at least some action on internet sales or some other way to come up with the other money. But I think people will be hearing a lot of talk about this, if not on the individual income tax level, on the business income tax level. And it's because of what Kansas did, where they've basically eliminated both. And everyone's watching to see whether or not Kansas has an economic boon, or if they have to go through with these huge budget cuts that are already being talked about because their income, at least preliminarily, has really plummeted.
Everybody at this time of year is talking about legislative priorities being the issue of jobs and creating jobs. We have a call from Jerry and O'Fallon who wants to get into this area, so let's hear what Jerry has to say. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, good morning and Happy New Year to all.
Same to you.
Thank you for a great introduction on the topic. We see over time the burden of taxation, the burden of all of the amenities that we rely on city and state levels are being passed on to individuals by companies making deals, essentially holding states or cities hostage. Well, we'll locate here if you give us this, where, of course, we as individual citizens don't have that kind of clout. And, you know, once again, as we try to struggle to go into the 21st century, we go to Jefferson City, and it appears to be Dogpatch USA all over again. And I heard the other day some of our legislatures falling all over themselves, bringing up Kansas as an example that, oh, my God, everyone's going to go across the border. When I think as we progress, we see that the way to attract jobs is to have a place that is attractive for that people want to live. And if we look across the country, places like Portland, Oregon, have invested more into amenities and into making their communities livable. We have a lot of natural attractions in Missouri, and once again, I feel like we're throwing it all away, bargaining for companies to come in here for a handful of jobs and further putting us deeper in the hole.
Terry, let me ask you to respond to that.
Well, I agree with much of it to the extent that the private sector pits both local governments and state governments against one another to strike the best deal. The public is all by and large the loser in that battle. On the other hand, Missouri, I think, would be wisest in terms of state government policy as an economic development strategy to do the things that state government supports the most, education and infrastructure, that are key to a healthy economy.
And should tax credits be a big part of that?
Well, to the extent that tax credits don't get you the education and the infrastructure that you need, reducing the amount of expenditures, because that's what they are, on tax credits makes sense.
Where are we going with the tax credit issue this term, Marshall?
Well, I think we may actually see some progress. The biggest reason why we have not had any type of agreement on tax credits is the difference of philosophy over what they should be used for between House leaders and Senate leaders, or should I say a group of fiscally conservative senators that were led by Chuck Pergerson, Jason Crowell, Luann Ridgway, who are no longer in the Senate. They're gone. We have Tom Dempsey, who I actually talked to last week, and actually brought up something that Ryan Silvey had tried to champion a couple of years ago during the special session, and that was, instead of having sunsets on tax credits, let's have a regular review process. And Senator Dempsey actually brought that up and said, you know, that's something that he could support. Now, perhaps not coincidentally, Representative Silvey is about to become Senator Silvey, so maybe there's a bit better chance to actually put together some type of economic development package that would include jobs or tax credits. There might be a better chance of it actually making it out this year.
Joe?
Yeah, and actually the tax credit fight is one of the unusual ones in that the governor also has been an outspoken advocate for years of curbing the tax credits or having major reviews or putting ceilings on it. So that's one issue where you actually have Nixon on the same side with some of the Republican critics of these programs. Now, their reasons may be different, but the bottom line is this has come up before, but I think this is the one case where you might not have such a partisan divide.
That's Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon. You can read her reporting at stlbeacon.org. You stole my line there a little while ago, Joe. Terry Jones of the University of Missouri, St. Louis, political scientist, chairs the Department of Political Science at UMSL, is with me in studio. And Marshall Griffin, St. Louis Public Radio's Capitol correspondent, is with us from Jefferson City. Back to continue our conversation in just a moment. And again, if you'd like to get into this discussion, give us a call at 382-8255. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to our legislative preview with Marshall Griffin, Terry Jones, and Joe Manis. I have an email here from John in St. Louis County. It takes us back to an earlier discussion, but it's interesting. I'd like to hear some detail on the proposed legislation to allow teachers to carry firearms in school. If it's simply allowing teachers with conceal and carry weapons permits to carry, I am not impressed. If it requires rigorous and frequent training and perhaps deputation, that would be a lot better than the current plan in my daughter's school, which is to hide in a corner and hope the shooter chooses another room. What detail do you have on the pre-filed bill there, Marshall?
Well, it is basically straightforward. If you have a concealed carry endorsement already and have that, then you would be allowed to bring your firearm onto school property with you and have it in the classroom with you, and that goes for both teachers and administrators.
Any thoughts, Joe or Terry?
Yeah, I think some school administrators and some school districts have already come out against it, as have the governor. And the reason is less about the guns than the fact that the bills would, in effect, preempt the rights of the district to decide about weapons in schools. I mean, Missouri school districts are generally pretty autonomous and sort of run themselves. There is some state involvement, but it's limited. And this basically changes that. And so that's sort of the tack that the governor and some of the school critics are saying, because they're saying, well, this curbs our rights to decide what weapons we want to allow in school and what we don't. And then there's also the liability issue. If a teacher has a weapon, let's say, and they lock it in their drawer or whatever, well, then A, somebody comes in, you don't have it, or B, a student gets it somehow and gets involved and harms another student. There's all sorts of liability issues for the school district. So I think some of the school districts are raising that point as well, concerned about what that's going to do as far as their liability. Could they be sued if somehow a teacher's weapon ended up being used in a wrong way?
This is more a symbolic battle, a rhetoric than actual policy. And the local autonomy issue, the Missouri School Boards Association, the superintendents group, the teachers group, all agree they don't want the state meddling in policies at the local level. So any mandate from the state would not be well received.
And let's not forget that at Columbine, there was an armed police officer, at least on the scene, and obviously was unable to change the outcome there.
I think the fact that this bill is co-sponsored by House Speaker Tim Jones and Majority Floor Leader John Deal ensures that it will get moved and it will probably get a full House vote. So even if it does get, even if it doesn't go anywhere as far as past the governor's desk, I think it definitely will get passed by the House and probably the Senate.
Let's return to the phones and another subject with Eric calling from St. Louis. Eric, go ahead.
We don't, on a regular basis, look at the income side of the equation. In St. Louis alone, we've redone 100 buildings downtown, and it wasn't about rebuilding buildings. What we were really trying to do was build a place where young people want to live and work. We now have an explosion in entrepreneurial activity and seed capital, and we haven't created jobs in this community. We're now beginning to create jobs. We have 200 companies that are being incubated by the IT incubator down there, I-10. And we need to be able to come up with a system. And you guys have been around for a long time in terms of politics. How do we get the state legislature to really look at the income side of the equation so we can really effectively evaluate these programs to see which ones are really working or not?
The caller is referring to the Historic Preservation Tax Credit, which has been a key element in the revitalization of both Kansas City and St. Louis, but particularly St. Louis. And it's the one part or one of the few parts of state government where the central cities really benefit disproportionately. And so they're going to fight, as they have fought very hard, to keep that credit as large as possible.
And the Governor Jay Nixon, though, has lined up with some of the Republican conservatives from the standpoint that they believe that there's too much being spent or there needs to be at least a lid on it. And this has to do with the fact, again, that there's concern that the state approves the credit, but really a lot of the governing and oversight is on the local level in Kansas City and St. Louis. And so there's been this tension between the cities and the state government over how the historic tax credits are utilized and how they're policed. I think there will be some discussion as far as the broader overall tax credit debate, but it will be interesting to see if it's more than just talk. I mean, this has come up almost every year. And the fact that it's mainly helps the urban areas has hurt it a little bit because you've got Republican majorities in the legislature, and most of them are from rural Missouri that don't use the tax credit that much.
Well, that brings the urban-rural divide up again,
yep.
as it does every time.
And the urban to say this is one of our few victories, so let us keep it.
Marshall, did you want to weigh in on the tax credit, or should we move along?
Well, other than just to say that I do think that there might be some type of economic development bill involving tax credits that will have a better chance of making it out this year. It might behoove the sponsors to try to make it as attractive to rural would-be developers as well. maybe working on historic preservation projects in, say, places like Neosho or Joplin or St. Joseph, and maybe not so much of a focus on St. Louis and Kansas City.
Back to the phones. Richard in St. Peter's joins us. Go ahead, Richard. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, I was just curious as to why we don't have a flat tax. You know, everybody's worried about all the other things, you know, about, you know, money for this, money for that. Why don't we just make it a flat tax across the board and cut out all the loopholes?
Richard, thank you. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, at the income tax level, we essentially have a flat tax.
In Missouri.
Because the top rate is everything essentially under $10,000 at 6%.
Yes.
Rex Singfield and the interest and the ideology that he puts forward would like a flat consumption tax, a much higher sales tax, and eliminate the sales tax. But that higher sales tax would be the same on all items.
Okay. Cliff in St. Louis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
As a union member, I happen to belong to a union that produces television motion picture work, and I travel between here and Connecticut and New York. That the idea that the dues checkoff would be eliminated, or there's an attempt to do that so that organization efforts are diminished, I wonder if corporations would submit to the same ability to return the money they skim off the top of laborers' wages and no longer participate in Citizens United.
Okay, Cliff. you're getting a couple of chuckles here, but go ahead, Terry.
Certainly that gets to the campaign finance issue, which is another one that's not going anywhere in my judgment in this particular session. So I realize the comment is both real in terms of the ability to corporations now to do more than they have in the past and facetious. But I don't think we're going to see anything different in the rules by which campaigns are financed in Missouri.
That comes under the ethics umbrella that they're talking about once again.
Yes. Yes, there's been efforts ever since the campaign finance restrictions in Missouri were thrown out. I mean, were eventually eliminated in 2008. There was a couple attempts. Took a couple years for the Republicans to do it, but they've done it. Nixon has said he wants to see campaign finance restrictions put back in place, but it's not that it has not been his top priority, and frankly, because he sees where the votes are, and that's true for the Democrats in the legislature as well. They're going to bring it up, but it probably won't go anywhere.
Marshall, anything to add? Shall I move?
No major changes in the tax code, at least as far as flat tax or national flat tax or sales tax goes. I think we might see a little bit of a tweaking here and there, but no major changes.
Let's bring in Joe calling from Kirkwood. Go ahead, Joe.
My manager at work told me Missouri was already a right-to-work state, and so businesses did not have to provide a break time or lunch time for their workers. Is that true?
No.
Nope.
No.
So it's not a right-to-work state.
No, we are not.
All right, thank you.
When was that? It was rejected. It was put to a vote 20 years ago?
1978.
Almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
1978.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about teachers and education. Marshall, let me turn to you for that. What is in the hopper or will be with regard to teachers and tenure and some of the issues that come up from year to year?
It's a little too soon to say. The big champion of teacher tenure was Jane Cunningham, who is no longer in the Senate, will no longer officially be in the Senate as of Wednesday. At this point, I do expect someone to take it up, but I'm not sure yet who that someone will be. Maybe perhaps Scott Dickhouse over in the House.
Thoughts from either, Cherry?
Again, until you have consensus that goes across the state, dealing with issues at the school district level, each school district wants to do it its way and not have the state that much involved, except sending a check.
Yeah, I think there will be some discussion because this is an issue that's been sort of important to Speaker Jones. He has been somewhat of a critic of tenure and some of the other things. Again, whether or not it gets anywhere depends on so many other issues and the priority that they place.
And I have to correct myself. Scott Dickhouse is no longer in the House. My apologies.
when we talk about maintaining majority, Don, you have to remember within the Republican majority on an issue, there's usually two or three or five or ten people of that background, including former teachers and superintendents who are part of the Republican delegation, who might not be where their speaker is on that kind of issue.
Yes, and this also extends to some of the labor issues. For this past election, labor in Missouri actually endorsed some Republicans who won re-election or who won election, and in some ways that was somewhat pragmatic, because the assumption is that maybe at least most of those legislators won't go along with some of these proposals if they got endorsements and possibly some money from labor unions in their area.
A couple of issues that come up all the time, it would seem, and certainly in other parts of the country, abortion and gay marriage. Are we going to hear any of this, Marshall, in this session?
There will probably be some type of abortion legislation, because there is one every year seems to get passed every year. It'll be interesting to see if what particular area the pro-life lobby and the pro-life contingent in the House and Senate point at, and which area of the abortion rights issue they go after. But I'm sure there will be at least one bill that will. Be the abortion bill of 2013. What was the other one?
Gay marriage.
Gay marriage. I don't think there will be any serious attempt or any serious effort to get it passed. But I do think you'll hear it talked about. It's probably noteworthy to bring up that the new Senate minority floor leader is the first openly gay person of that position, I think, in Missouri history. She got legally married to her partner in Iowa. So I would think that there might be some attention brought to that, and that Senator Justice may actually bring it up on the floor of the Senate. I haven't talked to her yet about that, but I would imagine that it will get some attention or some mention, but no serious legislative push, or at least that the Republicans would allow to happen.
Well, Missourians did pass in 2004. In effect, a ban on gay marriage, so they would have to reverse that, and I don't see that happening.
And the battle is primarily in the courts right now, in the federal courts. Until that's resolved, I don't think you're going to see much state legislative action.
Well, there does seem to be a certain momentum across the country
legislative action in Missouri.
Yeah, in Missouri.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got a limited amount of time left. What haven't we talked about, Joe, that we should be mentioning?
Well, I think some of this will depend on how personal relationships develop. My colleague Jason Rosenbaum has a really good story right now at stlbeacon.org talking about that. I think that Nixon's relationship with Speaker Pro Tem Dempsey will be better than his relationship was with his predecessor, Rob Mayer. I don't know if it'll be on the level of the almost friendship that the governor had with Charlie Shields, who was the Republican Senate leader when the governor came in 2009. But you can't discount, and this is true in Washington as well, how these personal relationships can affect what bills get pushed, what bills get passed, what deals get made.
In 30 seconds, Marshall, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that there will be a somewhat better relationship between the Senate and the governor's office, and I think there will be a better relationship between the House and the Senate this time around. That doesn't mean there won't be difficulties. Obviously, there will be at times, depending on the bill, but I think there will be improved relations between the House and the Senate.
Terry?
Will the state take advantage of lower interest rates and bonding capacity to have a major bond issue for infrastructure and education?
Yeah. All righty. Well, lady and gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. As you've said several times this morning, Joe, it's going to be interesting. There's an awful lot in the hopper, and will be between now and the middle of May.
And they have to pass a budget, which takes a lot of time.
And more detail on that forthcoming from Governor Nixon. Thank you, Terry Jones. Thank you, Joe Manis. And thank you, Marshall Griffin. Great to have you with us. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Dr. John Morley about increasing the odds of living past age 100, preventing strokes, and other issues pertaining to the health of older adults. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.